The Weekend Podcast on Vox Markets with Justin, Peter and Steve. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
What is going on, Steve? You are like a student. What time do you get up?
Well, for some reason, I slept from my alarm clock for half an hour this morning. I don't know
why. You slept through your alarm clock for half an hour?
Yeah.
Well, it was probably half an hour.
Yeah, how is that possible?
I don't know. That's not like me at all.
We said to you, he said, right, because Steve doesn't even get up for 8 o'clock some mornings. I thought, I don't understand how you can have a living in this day and age and not get up before eight. That's unbelievable.
I get up at half seven.
Well, you say sometimes you don't even get up for the bell when the market's open. Half seven, 7 o'clock, Steve. That's when the RNS has come out, yeah? That's when all the news is happening.
Oh, yeah.
Didn't you look forward to that? Are you shaving, Steve? What's that in the background? What is that noise? Is that the alarm still going off?
It's the kettle.
Oh, that's right. I get myself a nice cup of tea or coffee. What do you have to say? Tea, didn't you? You drink tea?
Yeah. Okay.
Well, can you move away from the kettle, Steve, because it's a background noise?
I'm nowhere near the kettle. I'm in a different room.
I like the fact that you're late for the podcast, but now there's still time to go and put the kettle on.
Yeah.
Steve.
Yeah, the reason why I want to get to... Listen, I'm going to West Wales this weekend, right, with the parents, the folks. And have you seen the weather? It's literally, they're shutting down festivals because it's so bad. You know, with 2 days' notice of shutting down festivals in like Newquay, because it's so bad. They said, and I was listening to the weather forecast today. They're saying, do you know what? The guy in the weather forecast said, it's never really this bad in August. He said, there's only a handful of times we've seen this kind of low pressure in August. So we're heading into the eye of the storm pretty much. So I don't know what we're going to do there. But some people said, where's the weekend? I've had at least two or three people keep saying, where's the weekend podcast? And of course, I've been away for like a couple of weeks. I went to Mexico. Went to Cancun in Mexico, right? Now, what, you know...
You didn't mention that.
No, and we're there around the pool, right, and around the resort there. And there's a predominance of a certain nation of people. Have a guess who they are. You'd never believe
Russians.
This. No, not Russians, no.
Germans.
No, not Germans.
Chilean.
No, keep guessing. No. Go on.
Higher, lower
than the Chilean. No, higher than a Chilean, yes. In the hemispheres, higher than a Chilean.
Oh, Canadian.
No, lower than a Canadian.
American, ironically.
No, I'd say to the east of it. Higher than England.
Greenland. Oh, Swedish. No, higher, Iceland.
No. Dutch.
No, listen, everywhere we went, right, I even made a friend with one, Scottish. Literally, Cancun is super popular, especially the Moon Palace, with Scottish people. They're everywhere. It's like, you know, I suppose there's probably about, five, 6 to 1 for population for England for Scottish in this country. But over there, it's all around. Everyone I bumped into. I met a guy, Cancun before. And literally, he's a good, and I don't like the stereotype, but Brian liked to drink. It's like, and he said, let me try this. Margarita, iceberg. I said, what? He said, iceberg, have you tried an iceberg? I said, what? Have I tried an iceberg? I said, no, what is it? He said, it's a margarita, daiquiri, it's a lager. So it's a margarita daiquiri on top of a lager. So literally, you've got you've got these margaritas, but obviously daiquiri ice on top of a lager in a long, thin glass. I'm not a bit of lager drinker. I'm not particularly a margarita daiquiri drinker. But you put them together, it's a wonderful combination. And literally, we're in the water park. It's the water park there with the kids in it. And this is about 11 o'clock in the morning, right? It's literally about 33 degrees. Me, yeah. Megan, Brian's there. His missus at the other pool, and he's drinking. I'm literally on my fifth iceberg with him. He's drinking in between whiskies, in between our rounds. And meanwhile, the way I'm talking to you, that's him. That's his voice on a sober in sober state. Yeah. After a few drinks, literally, I'm just squinting at him, looking at him, thinking, what language is he actually speaking? And sometimes he stops, and I'm thinking, has he asked me a question? I can't really, I can't know what to say. Yeah, and I saw a green, and I just talked for a long time, hoping to, you know, cover over it. But so literally, I got to know, he was there for 2 weeks, pretty much arrived the same day as us, him and his wife. They had a kid, you see, and these kids were the same age as our kid. And that, with kids, that's what we want to find a playmate for them. And so literally, I was good friends with Brian and his wife there. What's his wife name? Equally sort of 80s name, sort of, but Brian and his wife. But literally, I realised I was there for 2 weeks with him, but I didn't understand a word he said. We sort of got together, we got on quite well, and but language was a barrier. And yet we're in Mexico, and we got on quite well, but language was a barrier. And he had a really thick, he's from Glasgow. Oh, from Glasgow, yeah, yeah. And he's a really good guy. He said, "Cas, what?" He said, "Cas." I said, "What do you do?" "Cas." He said, "Car sales." "Yeah, I tell you, car sales." I said, "Oh, my father owns a car sales." "Yeah." So we had a lot in common, but I couldn't understand what he says. So it was really thick. But his wife was fine. You know, I couldn't understand his wife. I think it was more him, you know, than anything. But God, you like to drink.
We came together from the mutual respect of the iceberg.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's exactly the iceberg.
Let me tell you the iceberg. Have I tried the one? The iceberg. No, what is the iceberg? It's the drunkest. Margarita or lager. Okay.
We used to live near neighbours like that, where the man was Scottish and his wife was Welsh. Mm. And literally, he would talk. No one understood a thing he was saying. And then you just look at his wife, and then she would translate it as if like he was speaking completely different. I was like, "How do you understand?" He was like, "Oh, no."
it's unbelievable. But he was when Megan said, "Like Brian, you have to slow down. I can't understand what you're saying." He looked quite shocked that no one could understand him. You know, or I couldn't.
Right.
I just pretended I could and nodded. Yeah. That's why I think he quite liked me. Because most people, no, I was saying that in Cancun, of all the people, there's plenty of Scottish people in Cancun. I don't know why. I don't know, they must have special deals for Scottish people or something. I don't know what the deal is, but I mean, but there's a lot of Scottish there. But yeah, of all the people, he'd sort of gravitated towards us, you know, and so, but I just nod and talk. And so I think that he was happy with that, to be honest. You know, marvellous stuff. But let's talk about the markets. Mm. So have you seen what, you know, what's your PS looking like, your portfolios, guys?
How great is it?
It was until about a week ago, and then it's been a bit brutal, hasn't it?
Yeah.
For the past week.
It's been a lot of red.
Yeah, it was Trump, isn't it? Trump.
Well, it's everything, isn't it?
Well, yeah, well, the thing is, people are talking about, recessions and all that stuff, and worry, and a bear market happening. And it's worth pointing out, right, that bear markets don't happen on news on issues we know about, pretty much. You know, something comes out of left field and then that it pulls a rug from underneath us. So that's the issue. But I do believe we will be in a downturn. I said this for a while, haven't I? I've been going on about this for a while. Now, because we've had several indicators, it was what's called the inverted yield curve. Now, that can take, after an inverted yield curve, it can take anything up to 2 years. Pretty much the last 50 recessions have been preceded by an inverted yield curve. So it's going to happen. And so I did a video this week. I don't know if you saw that. There are 4 ways to make money in a bull market and a bear market.
I saw that. But I saw that you'd made it. I got my notification because I clicked the bell, but I haven't watched it yet.
Right. Okay. Well, I'll just summarize. But basically, it's a couple of ways. Fixed income like bonds and treasuries. Do you know what they are, Steve? They're boring anyway. But do you know what they are?
Well, yeah, I did watch the video, actually.
Oh, what? Normally, Steve, you usually say to me, I've watched all of them apart from this one. And
no, but you know, I've watched probably the last 3, if not 4. You know, I've been watching them on the bell. I've been getting the news. I have been watching them about the video, though, so I find it a bit distracted sometimes watching you. So I've just been listening to the audio.
Okay, thanks.
So sometimes it's quite good. Sometimes I watch it. Sometimes I watch it in the car, but I'm not obviously watching it. I'm just listening to it on the Bluetooth.
Yeah. So this is what I think, right? Essentially, fixed income, some bonds, treasuries. So that it's basically government debt. You know, the government borrow money, and you can lend them money, and they'll pay you a fixed return. But depending on the demand for those bonds, depending on whether their price goes up or down, like a share. You know, now if their price goes up, if the yield, the money they pay, it's like a dividend paying stock, you know, the yield comes down. So in simplicity terms, it's like a dividend paying share. If the share is a pound a share and they're saying we're going to pay 5 pence for every share you own in dividends this year, then that's 5%. Now, if the share price drops to 50 pence, but you're already in that financial year and they're saying, okay, we're still paying 5 pence for every share, that yield then, essentially, if you buy shares right then, you're getting 10% on that, you know? But if the share price goes up, let's say the share price doubles to £2, then that 5 pence becomes, you know, only 2.5%. So that's what's happening at the moment with bonds. Everyone's rushing into bonds. They're a safe haven. That is bringing the yields down. Now, a quarter of the governments in the world are paying negative yields. That means in even Germany, the biggest economy in Europe, if you... you know, take out the 10-year, I think, or the 1 year sort of bond, I think it is, you'll be paid about 96 cents for every euro you loan them. So people are prepared to lose money on these bonds because they see it as the lesser of evils. They say, putting money in the equities, you'll lose money. So that's really worrying. I mean, the most safe and the gold standard of treasury yields is obviously the Americans and the 10-year note in America. That's at one... dip below 1.6%. So people are still, prepared to just have 1.6% return. It's ridiculous. To me, bonds aren't really... I think I can get better return elsewhere, you know, than that, unless the stock market crashes. Now, the other options are Bitcoin. Bitcoin's becoming an increasingly... seem like a safe haven. It's rallying. I mean, governments... so what's happening is governments around the world are, you know, reducing interest rates. Basically, that's the price of their currency. So they're reducing... they're devaluing pretty much the price of their currencies. So everything else, like Bitcoin or gold, is going up. So people are jumping into Bitcoin. Bitcoin is very volatile, though. It's like 5 times more volatile than the S&P index. So it's very volatile and not as accessible, and people don't know about it. Another one which I quite like a lot is gold. Now, if you go back on my YouTube videos a long time back, six months back, you'll see the links below. I put my funds, and one of those funds in there is gold and silver. I owned a gold ETF and a silver ETF, but I got bored and sold them. Have you seen gold at the moment? It's gone bananas.
Yeah.
And it turns out that the government, not only a government or central banks around the world devaluing their currencies, they're also buying gold. So gold is shooting up, and it's gone crazy. But I am going to, sort of scale into gold. I've got to let it come back. The RSI on the chart on gold is above 80, so it's really overbought. It's got to come back. You can also get exposure to gold via mining producers or gold explorers like Cora Gold, or this Hummingbird is a producer. Of course, I had Dan on the podcast recently. I quite like that a lot. I didn't get involved. As soon as I didn't get involved, next couple of days went up by 12%. So, I think
Cora Gold is obviously exploration, but the news coming out of that is increasingly good and positive, which I like to see because I'm holding it. But then obviously it's playing into a nice timeline with, like you say, people moving to gold. So that's had a little bit of a rally recently as well.
It will come off, I think, but I'm in no doubt now, pretty much, we will be seeing a pullback in the stock market. I think the stock market will start to fall. So I just think now we've got to wait for the... not get too impatient, not have fear of missing out. If you're going to go into it, an ETF... I think ETF is one of the best bets because the BlackRock iShares gold ETF is called SGLN, is ticker. But that's physical gold. So they actually buy physical gold with that. So
how much did the gold and silver ETFs go up by then?
So I look at the moment gold. When I had the ETF, right, it's about 6 months back. The price of gold. The price is this is the ETF. So it was priced at $19 or $1,900. Sorry, is it $1,900? Yeah, no, $1,900. I think it is. But now it's at $2,400. So it's gone up by 5,000 pretty much. So $1,900. Sorry, I'm looking at the wrong chart. $1,900 is that, okay? Right. Was the price, the share price of this ETF back at the start of the year. And now it's at almost $2,500. So that, and literally, that the movement from 1900 only started in May. So May to now, it's gone from 1900 pretty much to 2,500. So it's shifted quite a bit. What's that in percentage terms? 30%? 30-odd% has moved up? That's quite a lot. It'll come back, because if you look at the charts, the RSI is now about it's at about 83. So it'll come back. But literally, you should always have gold. Everyone said this to me over and over again. You should always have gold, and it's one of the best hedges against a downturn. So you use it as a hedge. You put it in your portfolio, and you scale in. When no one's buying gold, that's when you should buy it. That's when you should accumulate it.
But through an ETF is your recommendation.
You could buy gold if you want to go out and start buying gold and see if you could sell it. You know, when you'll start seeing gold adverts going around. We'll buy your gold soon because that's when you're near the top of the market's in. When you see
does gold over time then just gradually keep on making money going up in price then?
Well, yes. So if you look at the chart, right, it's pretty much, I mean, look at the chart weekly there. Gold, because essentially, it's always been a store of value, you know, but it's limited supply. You know, they can only get so much out. It's hard to become a profitable gold producer, especially when it's like any commodity, it's cyclical, you know. When the downturn happens, people find it hard to produce gold below pretty much, you know, $800 an ounce, you know. And at the moment, it's $1,500 an ounce, so there's plenty of margin there. Now, you know, when it's down, it's, in fact, all in sustaining costs, pretty much, you can say, pretty much $1,000 break even, some producers are. So anything below that is hard work for them, you know. But when you're getting $1,500 an ounce, which it is in the moment, that's 50% profit. So it's a good thing. So, yeah, so, but yet, and like I said, it's not in mass supply. That's what makes it a precious metal. So, of course, with demand going up and supply coming on very slowly, you see a problem here. And you've got, you know, parts of the world are still, you know, gold is very sought after in India and China, and you've got a growing middle class there who demand gold as well. So demand is always there. But in times like this, when there's a downturn, people turn to gold. So it's always good to have gold. So it's, right now, we're at the wrong time to be sort of buying this stuff. But as I said, I should have been holding on to it and accumulating it back when I known. But what I'm hoping is this. I'm hoping Trump will sound out some words, say something positive happened in China, and then have them chats. Because apparently there's a trade meeting in September between China and America. And that's I think that's a catalyst for all this issue. So also Brexit coming up, you know. But that's the catalyst for all these worries, I think. So I'm hoping now we have a rally in the stock market, because last week, or this week, I think it was the worst week in US equities for a year, this year. So that's, you know, considering we are in the eighth month of the year, it's quite a volatile week, you know.
One thing I've been thinking about looking at, because it's worked for me well in the past, is a tracker fund based on the S&P 500 over there in the US of A. And the one that I had before, I noticed, was quite overbought recently. So I was kind of been watching it. But then it's that volatility that you kind of like, I wonder what's a good time to start tracking the S&P? Because like you say, the uncertainty, that ain't going to help. So I don't know what your thoughts on a tracker.
It's always nice to dip in there when it's oversold. But at the moment, you know, the S&P is at least 5% from its all-time highs, you know?
I know. That's what I mean. So you think it's going to come down, right? Because with the uncertainty with Trump and his tariffs and all the rest of it,
but you want something though that will essentially go up when everything else is coming down. That's what you want, and gold is that. Gold is exactly that hedge. So you want, you know, if you literally in an ETF, I'd be prepared to go for 25% of my portfolio, put that into that in a downturn, because you're pretty much hedging against so you hold your stocks in the portfolio. Don't sell stocks, just hedge them, you know. So gold is going up, it's holding, you've got 25% of your portfolio, because some stocks will do fine, you know, there'll be news out, small cap stocks, they'll still do well, the general value. But obviously with the general downturn sentiment, everything else is going down, so gold will be a hedge against that. So you mitigate your downside there, your losses, you know.
So when you say, like, it's possible to actually buy gold,
yeah,
but like, how do you do that?
Well, you can actually go to a jewellery shop or a trading.
You mean physically go and buy gold?
All these adverts on TV, sorry, buy gold. I mean, you can buy gold. You can buy nuggets of gold. All those old places. But no, Jim.
Well, what's his name? Why don't we send, as a little experiment? Why don't we send Steve around his little street there, door to door, see how much he can buy?
Yeah, well, exactly.
And then report back next week.
Trouble is then though, you got all the complexity of it being, what carat is it? You know, because of course we're talking when pure gold is good gold. I don't know what carat is, $1,500 an ounce. Yeah, that yeah. You know, that sovereign ring that Steve wears, or those sovereign rings that Steve's wear. I don't know if there's any gold in them. Is there, Steve, in your sovereign rings? What carats are your sovereign rings? You got them every finger, including his thumbs.
Well, they're obviously only 24 carat.
They're only 24 carat, so that's fine then. No, but that's
Steve,
when you see...
Go around with one of those eyeglasses, you know, those eye thingies, they look good. And we go door to door and look at everybody's gold and then and off make an offer.
Why is gold so popular? Is it because people want it for jewellery and like that, like different countries? Or is it actually used as practical metal?
But no, because originally it was used. I mean, a bank or central bank had to have gold stores, you know, and they were... So at the moment, paper money is just by the Bank of England. I forget the terminology, but you take it as a monetary value currency. It's worth something intrinsically. Before it wasn't. So when we went from bartering originally, you know, I'll sell you 10 chickens for a camel. You know, that's how you worked it out. Then you think, hang on, if I don't have a camel, I can't trade with this guy who's selling chickens. So I need something else that has value. And then people went to precious metals, like gold, you know? And then they said, well, not everyone's got gold. How can you give it a loan on paper? So it went to sort of a paper that was attached, that was pegged to the gold price, you know? So all money was attached or pegged to the gold price. So the valuation of the currency was attached completely related to the gold price, because essentially all that paper was saying, rather than having transport gold around because it's too bulky, saying we have this much gold in our storage and we'll give this loan note for that gold. So that's all it was. And then all currencies become unpegged because they become intrinsically valuable themselves. And Gordon Brown sold all the UK's gold off in the downturn when gold was at the low. And then gold then... He literally picked the bottom of the market, Gordon Brown, picked the bottom of the market, sold off all the gold, and it rallied like crazy, of course, from financial crisis. And so he lost potentially billions and billions and billions of revenue for the country. So gold was always the thing that people used as the standard of valuations, you know, so from money, everything. So, but now it's not, it's still regarded as that safe haven value, you know, because everything else was a floating sort of valuation on based on that.
And these days, how many chickens do you get for a camel?
I've no idea. It's got to be about 150, I'd say, would you?
Is it 150? Yeah.
Probably more than that.
Free range.
Yeah, well, I assume so. But if you get less ones, you know, caught up in the thing, in cages, they're not worth as much.
A battery, really battery, yeah. So 300 battery, probably, 150 free range. Or
where, do they put the batteries in hens?
Well, I don't want to go into that on this. But I'll send you a diagram.
Insert battery here. What? So anyway, what I want to say is that's another way. The fourth way I mentioned, which I'm happy with, which I'm loaded up on, is dividend paying stocks. Because this is the thought. If people always want a return for their money, you know, all the big money managers, all the investment houses need a return for their money. You know, now if bonds are close to a negative yield, you can't get a return there. If stocks are looking a bit risky, of course they'll have some exposure in equities, stocks. But, you know, not capital upside stocks, not risky stocks. This is why small caps may suffer, all right? Because you realise, you know, share prices will go down just based on sentiment in a bear market. So people think, okay, I'm not going to use money. But what don't go down so much are companies that, you know, can churn out, like, well, someone like Coca-Cola, will they, or like BT, or something like that, will they really be affected in a downturn? Not really. They won't. So the share price will go...
BT will just go down anyway.
Exactly. It goes down even when it's above. But what I'm saying, they won't really be affected. But you notice that companies that pay dividends are pretty much more insulated against a downturn because their yield goes up and so people head towards them, start buying those stocks for income in a downturn. So dividend-paying stocks are a good way to play a downturn. You know, I mean, a bit of that, not the entire portfolio. And that's why I think that I've got this dividend-paying ETF and I've got a big chunk of stock in there. That's playing 7% at the moment. I'm down 5%. So, of course, the total return on that is, for me, is only 2%. That's still better than the bond. You know, so bonds are less than that. Even the best bonds are less than that. So dividend-paying stocks will also be a bit of a haven for money in a downturn. So I think... So of those things, I think I'd like to have gold. I'd like to have a dividend-paying ETF. I've got a dividend-paying ETF. I haven't got gold. And that's the issue. I want gold. Gold's, at the moment, it's running too much. In fact, you know what? I literally put half a small toe in a gold ETF this morning, just to keep a track on it. Because I know I want to, even though I know the stocks will rally, I think, in the next few months, before the downturn, I want to keep an eye on it. So whenever I buy a stock in a company, I keep an eye on it. So I put a small toenail in a gold ETF this morning. It's at an all-time high. It's a ridiculous buy, I know, but I'll have no problem scaling in and, you know, when it drops. So yeah, gold. Anyway, does that make sense, loves? All right. Does that make a lot of sense?
Yes.
Peter, are you still there? I thought Peter's quiet. I thought Peter, that's unusual to have Pete, are you there?
Sorry. I am there, yeah. Sorry. I muted my microphone because I was drinking coffee, and I know you don't like people drinking on the podcast. I am here. Yes, hello. I totally agree. And I've also been thinking, along those the dividend-paying stocks as an income through the potential downturn that we might endure. And I like the iShares UK dividend fund, so I'm in that as well. And the other thing I was going to say, Lloyds Bank, you know, I've still got them in my portfolio, and you know they've taken a hit recently.
Well, do you know why they took a hit?
Results weren't great the other week. Well, that was my take on it, and obviously the whole Brexit and current pound plummeting to the ground doesn't help.
But also, I mean, listen, banks are at the centre of the economy, right? They really are. And also, what you've got here is the Fed, you know, reducing interest rates. Donald Trump wanted the Fed to do more reducing it. He said, listen, we're competing with the rest of the world, he said, pretty much, and we're raising ours, everyone else is lowering their interest. So literally, they did lower their... They reckon there's more on the way. So that they're doing that because they're worried about the economy. Global growth is slowing down. Now, Britain are going to do the same. They're having a lot to go. But, I mean, when you reduce interest rates, banks have less ability to earn money, you know? So that... Because that's how they... That's, you know, they loan... That's what banks do, is loan money, basically, you know? So if they haven't got a lot of interest rates to play with and they're pegged to the you know, the Bank of England's interest rate, they can't, you know, clear. If they can't clear 0.5%, you know, on loaning money, they're in trouble. If they loan you money, how much do you pay for now? If you get a bank loan from Lloyds, what, 2.5%, I suppose, or the lowest loan you can get?
Probably.
Yeah, about 3%.
I don't know,
obviously, they pay out if you deposit money with them, they'll pay you what, less than 1%, but they'll charge you 3%. So that's how they make money. But you know, the interest rate comes down, they can't charge as much. Their thing will come down as well. So that's why they're having issues. So
but the point I was going to make was because I bought the I haven't bought Lloyds for years. I've just had that holding from back in the day when we were buying it through the financial crisis and whatever. So that's been sat there in my portfolio. And yes, the actual value of that stock has come down in the recent weeks considerably, but because of my average buy price and the dividend they're paying, I'm getting about a 7% return. So you're like, well, yeah, I'm getting, just hold on and, you know, keep going. I don't need that money, so I'll just earn a 7% dividend. So that's, I'm all right with that.
Yeah, you know, well, no, I think with the dividend, IUKD, by the way, I've mentioned in the video several times, is what I'm into. There's plenty of them around, but that's BlackRock's version. The thing to do with this, the way to play it, is like when the share price comes down, it all comes low, top up, like I say, once a quarter. It's pretty much a retirement fund. So you top up once a quarter, then you get paid dividends, you know, every quarter, and you are averaging down all the time. So what you need to do is get your price down as low as possible. So you are, you know, profitable at an historic low. You are almost, you know, break even on that pretty much if you can. And then, of course, every time you get paid a dividend, 7%, you'd be earning 7% a year on that. Of course, if you're down like 5%, like I am at the moment, then, you know, overall I'll be 2% up this year if it carries on the share price. If the share price goes up, then obviously the yield will come down a little bit, but I'll be earning on the capital side. So, so...
And it's less risky than being in one stock like Lloyds.
Oh, but exactly, I'm just saying.
I'm just saying that my position, I'm just going to hold. If you bought Lloyds now, the dividend yield is 6.5%. So it's an interesting one for somebody to buy into, but why would you do it right now? I would buy into a fund that, where you're spreading the risk across a much broader range of dividend-paying stocks.
Yeah, so in gold, for me, it's gold and dividend-paying stocks is the way forward. talking about individual stocks. Did you hear James Draper on the podcast yesterday from Bidstack?
I haven't.
So he's been away. He's been at China. Yes. They bought PubGuard. The guy, Justin Wenschke, is also CEO of PubGuard. And he's a sharp guy, James. And there's a bit of worry because a rival company have signed, raised some money with WPP. WPP is one of the biggest advertising companies in the world. And James said, well, don't worry about that. First of all, they are ahead of them. But he said, now that they've raised money with an individual advertising agency, they're in a bit of trouble, really, because there'll be other advertising agencies who won't go with them. So they're not neutral anymore. I said, so I understand that. So he said, we want to be as neutral as possible. He said, we've had chances to do deals with advertising agencies. We don't want to do it, you know, but it'll limit us. He said, and that's that was part of the problem that Massive Inc. had. So Massive Inc. was one of the first companies to start a programmatic in-game advertising. It wasn't programmatic back then. It was in-game advertising. And Microsoft bought them for, I think, $400 million. You know, so everyone thought, wow, it's going to be amazing. But then, because Microsoft bought them, there's an issue. Other companies didn't want to advertise because other gaming companies didn't want to advertise with Microsoft because Microsoft obviously on their own gaming platform. So it was they weren't neutral. So there's something to be said for being a neutral in game advertiser and not being bought up by a big company, because if you get bought up by a big company, other companies won't advertise because obviously it's the platforms are very competitive, aren't they? Microsoft against all the rest of them. So yeah, but
we've worked in radio and we know that exactly works when companies agencies buy into get bought up by other radio groups, because there's quite a bitter thing about putting your money into your competitor's pocket, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. So it makes a lot of sense. But also, people, I mean, Bidstack, listen, it's £67 million. It's highly valued, but there's a lot of potential there. But, you know, people get carried away and they're going nuts on it. I think calm down. Like James said, there'll be news in Q3, news in Q4. Q3 is where we're getting things in order and sorting things out and really get ready. And Q4 is where we ramp it up. He did say he's confident about hitting target this year, which is fine. The revenue will be, 5.6 million, which is like, you know, for a 60 million market cap company, that's not a lot. But hang on, when you consider the first 3 months, they had 300,000 last year. It's like a 2,000% increase on that. You know, so it's you're buying growth here. So how fast can this company grow? And James has said, what we're doing right now, why we bought PubGuard, is we want to be able to grow seamlessly, scale seamlessly without having issues. That's what we're doing. It takes a lot of time to do that, and so. You know, it's all about growth. We know the potential is huge. We don't know how big this, in reality, this potential is. But it's an exciting company. But you've always got to look at the market cap. Like, you know, it's done 8 bags so far from 5 pence. It's low. That's a lot. That's the fast, easy money. I think there's still a lot of money to be made here. Of course there is. But is it going to be as easy as that 5 pence to 40 pence? I don't know if it will be, you know. Like, they've now got to generate £67 million worth of value, because the value is £67 million, to double again. Now, of course, they don't have to do that actually, but it's just a perception that they can do that easily. I think it'll still be one of the stars of AIM. Definitely could be. But you've always got, that's why market caps are very important. As companies get bigger, they grow more slowly. But I still think Bidstack is one of the most exciting companies around and has the potential, especially with the guys they got there. James is very sharp, the team very sharp. I like it a lot. But I'm just saying, guys, don't get carried away with, you know, and I did overexpose on Bidstack completely. I was really over the top on it. And I've brought it back a bit now to where, to an uncomfortable, you know, where it's, in fact, I'm quite bearish in time. I got no stock now in my portfolio over 6% of my exposure, that holds more than 6% of the value of my portfolio. So I'm quite bearish on the old economy. And not only that, I'm not bearish because I just want to get out and sell everything, because I think there's opportunities to pick up when we have sell-offs. You can buy more stock at a better level. There's plenty of stocks, you know.
Yeah, you've got to think that there is going to be buying opportunities in the next 6 months to a year, probably.
Well, that has been with Bidstack. It's went up to 40 pence. Yeah. It's going up to 27 pence. Now,
I'm talking about the wider market. So what's your cash position at the moment as a percentage?
My cash position is, I've got a big chunk in the ETF. So my ETF is holding 50% of my money at the moment.
Right.
My cash position is about just under 5% at the moment. But I want,
that's quite low.
Yeah, I want to get up to 10%. But I'll be taking some of that, I think, I'll be putting money into gold ETF. If that
will you take money out of your ETFs to buy smaller cap stocks?
Yeah, I don't. Well, the thing is, I don't want to really take any out of that to dividend paying stocks. Every share I have in there earns money, you know? Well, I get dividends off that.
But I thought of this because when I've got cash on my thing, it almost feels like it's not doing anything, just sitting around waiting to invest in waiting for something. So then I have thought, well, why don't I just chuck it into my RUK ET funds just for the time being until. And you can just pull it out then when you need it.
Yeah, well, exactly. Steve, that's a very good call. That's one of the most sensible things you've said in your entire life. Exactly. If you've got... The thing is, what you're going to look at is cash. Listen, cash is value decreases. It's what's happening now. That's the whole point of it. That's what's happening. What you have is inflation. That brings the value of the spending power of your cash down, you know? All the time, your money is devaluing as you're holding it as cash. So you've got to be earning above inflation rate and a bit more, actually, because they say the inflation rate is more than you actually think, to actually, you know, keep it at the level as it is, its purchasing power as it is. So, yeah, I think what you're saying there is good. I mean, if you look at the RUK D fund, it's literally at a seven-year low in that share price. It's just now hit... we had a big sell-off in December last year. The old global industry sold off.
Yeah,
it's hit that. Went a bit lower, and now it's bounced a bit higher. So, that was £7.20. It's now It went up to £7.13. I bought some at £7.13. Yeah, £7.14. Now it's at £7.22.
I'm going to wait until it's a 10-year low.
Well, no. The thing is, like I said, Steve, top up. Don't just chuck all of it in there, though.
Yeah.
You've got until. Is it September, I think, until the next
dividend
date? So, you know, as long as you're putting money in, you won't get to... I agree with you.
I took a few quid into the... I'm not sure if it's been bought yet, into Vanguard, ready to invest, as it says.
Yeah. I bought some more of that. I got that quarterly. The Vanguard, that covers the entire world of equity, pretty much. So it's quite... I mean, I'm up 10% in that, but I haven't got a lot in there, but I put a little bit in every quarter. These are the kind of funds you need to be, you know, trickling in over the next... up until retirement, pretty much.
Well, that was going to be my question, because, like, obviously, the iShares RUKD share, that's fund, that's well diversified, obviously, so that's good, and you've put a chunk in there, obviously, by the sounds of it, but that's why I was looking at the S&P tracker or something, like looking at other funds, other things to do, rather than having it all in. Although it's very diversified, it's still only one fund, isn't it? But then,
Well, if you look at Vanguard. So the Vanguard Life Strategy funds, right? You can do any combination of equity and fixed income. So you can say, so there's the Lifeguard, obviously 100%. That's what I'm in. Equity fund is 100% equity. But if you look at them, all they invest in is all their funds, and it's pretty all around the world. So pretty much, I think about 60% of it is. US, Europe, and UK equities, you know? But the rest of the 40% is around the world equities, so...
What are the fees like?
Oh, very very small, tiny. It's literally 0.3% or something like that.
Yeah, but because it's kind of passively managed, basically.
Well, that's why Vanguard was set up. Vanguard was set up, and they are the lowest in the industry because they were set up to say, all these managed funds are ripping you off. So that's Vanguard. They champion that. You know, so it's very low-cost funds.
I wasn't sure if that's all of their funds are like that. Cool.
Pretty much, yeah. So, but just reiterate, I know I'll have people saying, slag me off, but BidSAC. I still like BidSAC a lot. I still hold stock in the company. But, you know, every company you have to understand is there is the scale in and scale out opportunities. Right now, I'm willing to scale back into BidSAC on news coming out, because I think they'll be news rich the next couple of quarters or the next few months. So I think, you know, we've had a fallow period of news now. It's grinded down. We've had some worries, people worrying about it. And then it's all there. And I think the momentum there. And again, you know, you have to keep an eye on the valuation of it, the market cap, but it has a lot more potential. But, you know, we're in this period yet. We're starting to realize, you know, where are we here? And so, you know, shares go up and down. And, you know, I think you can constantly... You know, you can have a core of holding and buy and sell more all the time if you want. If you trust the company, trust the board of directors, trust the ownership of the company, like I do a BidSAC, you can scale in, you know, have a core in there, say 3% of the entire portfolio, and then scale in and scale out with 7% worth, you know, when you think there's more risk on, more risk off. But, I'm not just talking about being a dirty trader there. I'm saying about investing and playing the cyclicality of the market.
Mm. Right.
Essentially, you're not a dirty trader, you're just playing the cyclicality of the market.
That's it. Right. That sounds like waffle. Well done.
Anything else? Open Orphan, I like a lot. I don't understand why Safestay is so cheap. Unbelievable. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, it's five. I emailed yesterday, day before yesterday, by the video, just to get confirmation. Are you still on target for, you know, 20 hostels by summer? Because this is what Nunu Sacramento, or a good name that is. Mm. Nunu Sacramento, he's COO, by this time next year. Because he said that on the podcast. He was on the podcast about over a month ago now, maybe 2 years. And he said, absolutely. And I said, well, you have to, and I said, but surely you're going to have to buy a, in a hostel every 2 months for the next year. He said, yeah. I said, well, you have to buy a group, surely. Because that's the problem with the hostel market in the UK. Hervé, who's the CFO, did a video with Abraham on Vox. And he said, go back beyond before the 90s, that the hotel market was very fragmented. There's only 3% pretty much, or single-digit figures, were branded under, you know, one brand. He said now it's over 40% of the hotel market are branded. So it's a, you know, massive consolidation. Hostel markets like that now, it's only 3% is branded, you know? Only 3%, it's all individual operators, you know, maybe on one or maybe on a couple. What Safestay are going to do is consolidate this market. They're going to buy the right ones up, brand them, because their brand is fantastic. They're like, really is a smart looking, they're like hotels, not like hostels. They're really smart. They brand them up under their offering, and they consolidate the market. So I said, but surely you're going to have to buy groups. He said, well, that may have to happen. There may be some small operators that own one, two, or three hostels, and they'll just buy that group up, you know? So, and pretty much, you know, so every hostel they buy, bottom line, it's £1 million in, sorry, top line revenue, £1 million adds £1 million in top line. They are now profitable this year. They are generating cash. They don't need any cash. What's not to like here? They're valued at 22 million. Maximum 21, and yet they're cash generative. The board behind them are unbelievable. They've performed. Larry Lippman, was the guy behind SafeStore, took it from nothing, pretty much where safe they are at the moment. And he says there's more opportunity now in the hostel industry than there was in the storage industry. Storage industry was very similar. It's a very fragmented market at the infancy. SafeStore took it from, you know, sub 50 million market cap to 1.3 billion. So, and he sold up just before that. But you can see the opportunity. The guy who's done it before, he's a serial entrepreneur. So I'm just thinking, you've got Mighton selling down, you know, institutional investors sell down for no reason other than the market cap is low, or below their threshold investment level, and that's it. So you've got this, it's an illiquid company, not much, you know, shares are bought and sold, and you've got this big seller happening. So whenever you get a bit of, you know, their chance to sell, they do. And so it hits the share price. So 21.6 million is market cap. Their net asset value is 28 million. That means if you just broke up the entire group, sold it for everything they've got there, you're doing a profit on that of 6 million already, which is nuts. That means no potential is priced in, no growth is priced in, the fact that cash generative is not priced in, nothing's priced in here. It's what's called a bargain.
Why is it so low? It's a bit bizarre, isn't it?
Yeah, well, exactly. And that starts to, in itself, breed fear. But I think there's nothing, nothing to hide here. I think it's just the seller. A seller and lack of news. And I've asked the guy, I said, listen, you need to come on the podcast, do a bit more PR, you know, because you are an excellent story. And people need to know more about you, but we can't do a lot unless you. I said to them, I come from the world of radio. You have to treat what you do as an advertising campaign. An advert doesn't run once over a month. That's it. You know, advertising campaigns are literally non-stop for weeks and weeks and weeks. And so that's what you have to do. There's 1,000 companies on AIM, or pretty much all looking for investors' money. You have to be at the front of people's heads all the time, saying, this is the message, this is our story, and it's a cracking story. You know, there's companies out there getting in private investors' money. It's a dreadful story. Essentially, will not make a return over the next 5-10 years. But this is the company that will make a heck of a return, I think. But yet, you know, they're not well-known. Safestay, SSTY, I think it's a decent business. Anything else? Polarin, I really like that a lot. Are you in Polarin?
Yes. Steve?
Did you buy it?
Yeah, only a small chunk, because it obviously rocketed before I got to wake up from the bell when it had that morning.
Yeah, that's right. Steve said that. Yeah, I did a video on them. And I said, yeah, I won't do it because you probably have coverage over the weekend and it'll rally up. And on the bell on the Monday, I bought some. And they went up. And Steve didn't bother. On the bell, they were flat for like the first hour of trade. I bought some on the bell. And then they went up by sort of, I think.
It wasn't the first hour because it was about half hour after I saw. About 8:30.
Oh, so you get up at 8:30, do you, Steve?
Well, no.
Extra half hour
just,
in bed.
I'm just not like you. I wake up and check my stocks first thing in the morning.
What are you? What are you doing? We don't know what you want. It probably rhymes with stocks. We don't know what you want to, what you're checking first thing in the morning, Steve, all right?
Yeah, we don't want to know.
That's the first thing I checked. Look at the phone, see what's happening. But listen, this is a long-term business. I think it'll do very well. Like I said, what people understand, clinical trials are very risky. The only reason why they have to do a clinical trial is because of xenon gas involved. That's seen as like, and it goes into the body of a human. That's why, but they are a medical drug device company. Now, why clinical trials, when you're testing, you know, phase 1, 2, and 3 are high risk, is because they're testing the drug in a humans. Humans, you know, you can get the same drug, but you get 5 humans, and they can all react differently to that drug.
Yep.
This is not happening with this company. They're not testing on humans. Their machine is going against another machine. Machines are very predictable, so they have to prove non-inferiority against an old tech company that's been around for 40 years. Now, this older tech basically produces two-dimensional, low-resolution images, and it uses radioactive material. So it's harmful to humans. It's rubbish. Polarin's tech is non-harmful. It's xenon gas, which you breathe in the air anyway. It amplifies the MRI scan by 100,000 times, and it's it produces 3D high-resolution images. It's a no-brainer for me.
I was listening to your podcast and you were saying MRIs are dangerous to humans, but then you were saying theirs isn't. But you're still using the MRI machine in their technology, though, aren't you?
No, but they're inhalation. So, yeah, well, no, the standard at the moment, though, the standard is not the MRI. It's beyond that. Scintigraphy. It's some kind of, it's less than that. So, no, but what I'm saying is their inhalation of their xenon gas is not harmful. When you go for a Wostim scan, a normal scan of the chest, like my son has it done. He goes in there and everyone else has to stand behind a big barrier. He has to wear a radioactive coat, so everyone has to wear it, and he can only have one done once every 7 months. But theirs is this is not harmful. So all they have to do is breathe in. Do they go in the MRI scan? I don't understand. Yeah, no, maybe not. I don't understand. But they have to.
That's what I was getting confused, because you were still saying they still need to go to the MRI scan. And I'm like, well, there's no difference to an MRI scan. No, I'm not saying it's obviously still amazing technology, but.
Yeah. Are MRI scans harmful?
Well, they can't be, because otherwise they wouldn't use them, would they?
No, but X-ray machines are harmful. So,
yes.
So.
I'm not sure MRI are.
Oh, no, because MRI just use, like.
So that's it.
MRI, I'm looking at it. Magnetic resonance imaging is one of the safest technologies looking for deep.
Yes.
So they're not. Why.
So you're thinking of
X-ray. Yeah, so see, they're going up against an X-ray machine, basically.
Yeah. Okay.
Which my son has done. Okay. MRI, a lot more expensive though to use than X-ray, but X-rays are very harmful. So my son can only have an X-ray once a year, pretty much. He can have an MRI with this and their tech. He could go in there as often as he wants to. So basically, they're comparing. To me, it's a no-brainer. And the fact that Richard, the CEO, put 80 grand of his own money in just before on the fundraise, you know, and a couple of institutions as well, who are already, says to me, do you know what? And also, what he said in the podcast, they've done their own clinical trial, and it's passed. Yeah. So all they need to do is do it for FDA, pretty much. Say, let's do it properly then, independently. But it's been done in hospitals anyway. Hospitals are using this for research purposes. So it's a no-brainer. The phase 3, I think, will be, it's always risk. There may be something, in the document they haven't submitted for the FDA, and they say, okay, you have to refill this. But it's very much a collaborative thing with the FDA anyway. So,
Now the price has come back a bit from its little rally. Because I put some in, but yeah, I'd be up for putting a bit more average up a bit now. But what would be your thought in terms of actually doing that? Hold on until it settles a bit more, or buy a bit now?
Mm-hmm. Well, again, you can never guess the bottom of the share price. So scaling is a wonderful thing to do. Scaling, is the way forward, isn't it? So if in doubt, always scale in. and that way hopefully you get a decent average. You know, that's all you can do. But I always say, always go smaller than larger, you know? And that's, if there's any mistake I've always made, recurring mistake, I've gone too big too quickly, you know? You've always got time. You're talking about investment horizons over months, not days, months. So that's the way you should be looking
but
at it.
But equally,
you
know, going big early is the best strategy, isn't it? Take
when,
big stack
when the
at
share
60.
Price is very low, yes. Very low, yes. But when it's risen a little bit, no, you know? So, anyway, lads, I've got to go. I'm going to West Wales this weekend for a washout because that's where the worst weather is in the country. So that's where we're headed for a holiday for a couple of days. We've pinpointed the most horrific weather of all in the country, and that's where it is, apparently.
right,
okay. So that's where we're going. So have a nice weekend, lads, and speak to you next week, yeah?
Okay, bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
The Weekend Podcast on Vox Markets with Justin, Peter and Steve. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.